So I'll give a reading this evening. This is from the Numerical Sayings. It's in the Numerical Discourses, the Book of the Nines. It's the third sutta in the Book of the Nines. Number 3. This is an extract from this. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So Buddha is talking to a young disciple of his called Meghiya. Meghiya, when liberation of mind has not matured, five things lead to its maturation. What five? Here Meghiya, bhikkhu, has good friends, good companions, good comrades. When liberation of mind has not matured, this is the first thing that leads to its maturation. Again, a bhikkhu is virtuous, he dwells restrained by the Patimokkha, that's the training rules, possessed of good conduct and resort, seeing danger in minute faults, having undertaken the training rules, he trains in them. When liberation of mind is not matured, this is the second thing that leads to its maturation. Again, a bhikkhu gets to hear at will, without trouble or difficulty, talk, concerned with the austere life that is conducive, opening up the heart. That is, talk on fewness of desires, on contentment, solitude, not getting bound up with others, and arousing energy on virtuous behavior, concentration on wisdom, on liberation, and on the knowledge and vision of liberation. When liberation of mind is not matured, this is the third thing that leads to its maturation. Again, a bhikkhu has aroused energy for abandoning unwholesome qualities and acquiring wholesome qualities. He is strong, firm in exertion, not casting off the duty of cultivating wholesome qualities. When liberation of mind is not matured, this is the fourth thing that leads to its maturation. Again, a bhikkhu is wise. He possesses the wisdom that discerns arising and passing away, which is noble and penetrative and leads to the complete destruction of suffering. When liberation of mind has not matured, this is the fifth thing that leads to its maturation. When Meghiya, bhikkhu, has good friends, good companions, good comrades, it can be expected on that he will be virtuous. When a bhikkhu has good friends, good companions, good comrades, it could be expected of him that he will get to hear at will, without trouble, with difficulty, talk concerned with the austere life, conducive to opening up the heart, talk on fewness of desires. When bhikkhu has good friends, good companions, good comrades, it could be expected of him that he will arouse energy for abandoning unwholesome qualities, not casting off the duty of cultivating wholesome qualities. When a bhikkhu has good friends, good companions, good comrades, expected of him that he has been wise, possessing the wisdom that discerns the arising and passing away, which is noble and penetrative and leads to the complete destruction of suffering. Having based himself on these five things, because you develop further another four things, perception of unattractiveness should be developed to abandon lust. Loving kindness should be developed to abandon ill will. mindfulness of breathing should be developed to cut off thoughts. The perception of impermanence should be developed to eradicate the conceit, I am. When one perceives impermanence, the perception of non-self is stabilized. One who perceives non-self eradicates the conceit, I am, which is Nibbana in this very life. So, as with many of the Buddha's exhortations, this huge amount in a quite a compressed form, any one of these pieces you could take and chew over and talk about for a long time. Yeah. Clearly, when the Buddha met people, this might be, you know, in some cases they might not see him very often. So I think he felt whenever people talked to him, he'd give them the whole thing, because he might not see him for another 2 or 3 years. So, you know, it's something to be getting on with. And I can't go into all of this, but I'd like to point out a few features. At this time in our gathering together, we are still gathering, we're still settling, I suggest, still, you know, getting used to being here, you know, change of routines, getting up early, meditating, changing our rhythm, our energies from, say, high speed, talking, doing stuff, into steady, quieter, steady state energy. This means it's quite a lot of shifting has to occur to do that. And so at this time, so gathering together and generating the conditions that will support further penetration and understanding. This is what, pointing to at this time. You know, as I said before, this is a Dhamma retreat. It's not exclusively a Vipassana retreat or a Jhana retreat or a Metta retreat or even a meditation retreat. These are all part of it. Any one of these will fit into it. You know, some of it will fit into it. It's a Dhamma retreat. Establishing something and essentially establishing a broad foundation. Partly because for many of you in your daily life, you know, although your intentions may be strong, clear, you're not living in an atmosphere or a society or, we could say, a field of Dhamma. You're not living in a situation where readily and at will, you know, you can receive Dhammic input from the world around you. Maybe one or two of you are, but I imagine many of you are receiving non-Dhammic input. It doesn't conducive to the cessation of suffering. It doesn't penetrate, liberate the heart from suffering, but actually does the opposite. So, it's considering the conditions that support this. And the repeated theme in this, for starting saying the maturation, which means something has to not exactly be done, but to grow. The proper term that we use is called pavana, which means to cultivate. The word meditation itself is one of those English words that's got placed onto Buddhist practice, and it's really meditation, really a Christian thing, whereby you repeatedly bring up an image of Jesus or stages of the cross or something like that. Meditate means to repeatedly put something in your mind. So actually Buddhist mind cultivation is rather broader than that. Yeah, it's about putting things into mind. It's also about receiving experiences. And so one of the first things we receive is maturation, is a supportive company. And this theme runs throughout this discourse. And in fact, it's one of the reasons why the discourse was given, because this Meigye was rather young, inexperienced. He wanted to go off and practice on his own. He didn't want to be attending to the Buddha. He was supposed to be the Buddha's attendant. He got fed up with washing the Buddha's robes. He wanted to go off and do some serious practice. So the Buddha said, no, you can't. And after two or three times, he kept insisting. He said, okay, go do what you need to do. And Meigye went off on his own. He found himself completely overwhelmed with unwholesome thoughts. He came running back to the Buddha. The Buddha said, no, you know, you should stick around with noble friends, because, you know, you go out there on your own, you don't have the conditions and causes aren't established in your mind. So the first of these, the thing that runs throughout this, is Kalyanamitta. Mitta, associate, a friend. It's not exactly metta, but it's clearly, you know, something of that nature. There's a sense of camaraderie, companionship, friendship. Kalyana, a word that means beautiful, admirable, lovely. The Dhamma itself is called Kalyana. Kalyana in the beginning, Kalyana in the middle, and Kalyana in the end. It's uplifting, it's gladdening, it's lovely. Something we want. So these are friends and companions who touch the heart, who inspire, who gladden, who encourage, who comfort you when you're in stress, who gladden you when you're feeling miserable, encourage you when you're feeling down, point out things you haven't understood when you need to have them understood. And so they care for you. And it's not a sentimental care, it's a sense of compassion and care for your citta. So it's not just a social chum, social friend, but actually someone who's caring for your welfare. So this being in this condition, this basic condition, and this condition is the prevalent condition, runs throughout this sutta, and this is why, of course, you know, in Buddhist cultivation, you know, sangha means gathering the assembly. So it's people of like-minded who can encourage, gladden, inspire, comfort, restrain, point things out. So we need that. Now, one thing, you know, to bear in mind is you know, a lot of this practice with the idea of what we're doing. You know, we're trying to bring our minds back. We're trying to control our minds. We're trying to get rid of unwholesome thoughts. You know, we want to get into stronger concentration. We want to do meditation. We want to, you know, we feel we can't do it because these difficult feelings keep happening. We feel lonely and sad or critical. We can't. And so it's really struggling against all these unskillful, unhelpful conditions. And we try and we try and we try. We get tired of trying. Then we give up. Then we still feel miserable. So you try again. But what's happening is you don't have the supportive conditions. The primary supportive condition is this kalyanamitta, and the kalyana quality. It means not something we do, but something we associate with, we draw close to, we associate with. So in fact, we receive something. So it's a different sign, isn't it? As I might have mentioned somewhere along the last couple of days, there's the active aspect, what we do, and we say there's also the receptive aspect, what we receive. They're both equally important, but in the receptive aspect, it's quiet, open, we drink in. And it's important to cultivate this so that we can absorb the skillful, notice it, give it time to ripen and settle. And with that, This is how wisdom arises. Wisdom arises in those times when we pause, settle, and we contemplate. How was that? Not doing anything more really than just exploring or inquiring or receiving, you know, how the heart, how the mind is now. And this is so. This wisdom occurs more in the receptive aspect, and having cultivated some degree of discernment, some degree of clarity, some degree of understanding, that was not beautiful. That led to pain. That felt better. Then it's okay. Now my direction has been clarified. Now I do this. Because I've seen something, now I do this. I've directly seen myself a supportive condition, an unsupportive condition, I've chosen, and I'm going that way. Then we do. And we do, and then you... What's the results of that? Does that work? Yeah, that's pretty good, but perhaps a little bit less of this, more of that. So this is where you train yourself. So just to bear in mind, that'd be the two qualities. Doing and the receptive, doing, receiving. Now, so in the Buddha, Kalyanamitta is a very clear example of associating with receiving. Sense of people or living in an atmosphere where there's a sense of something is concerned for your welfare, you know, that quality. And so this associate with that. Now, on another occasion, the Buddha presented what he called the four conditions for stream entry. So stream entry is a very secure foundation for Dhamma practice. It means we've freed up, we've got our feet on the right ground, we're going the right direction. And so in stream entry, a huge amount of coarse suffering is finished. So a mountain of coarse suffering, suffering of self-criticism, confusion, worry, grief, was really heavy stuff. And what's left is a kind of refined, more tenuous forms of suffering. You don't even really, they don't even feel like suffering, actually, compared with the stuff you've been through. You know, like attachment to fine mind states is not particularly anguished. So it's actually, the rest of it's fairly refined. So the stream entry has to do a lot of work on digging through some pretty heavy suffering and stress, yeah? And so the four conditions for that, so Buddha said, this is called the breakthrough. So you've shifted this lot, you've done a lot of really good work that will always pay off for you. And the four supports for that are to hear the Dhamma, to practice in line with the Dhamma, to have Kalyanamitta, skillful friends and associates, and to have careful attention, deep attention, wise attention. Yoni Somni Sikara, I mentioned this factor before. So these are the four supports, four conditions. And if you look at that further, you can consider, well, okay, so where do you hear the true Dhamma from? Kalyanamitta. Yeah. And how do you practice in line with Dhamma? Through careful attention. Right. So really, you can almost say it comes down to those two factors. Yeah. So Kalyanamitta, people you get some guidance from, true guidance from, who present, encourage, model skillfulness, various aspects of it. So you receive that, and that gives you the inclination to carefully attend in line with what you received, pick it up, discern what's meaningful for you at this time, and choose how you want to focus your intention on mindfulness of breathing, and just notice here again this example the Buddha uses. Well, okay, then you can meditate. But it gives us four themes, not one. There you are. So we have this unattractiveness to dispel raga, passion, often associated, generally associated with passion for the body, for the attractive, or what seems to be the attractiveness of the body. Mindfulness of breathing to dispel turbulent thoughts, thinking processes, distracting, running out, mind running out. And loving kindness, goodwill to dispel various forms of ill will. And then the perception of impermanence to eradicate this conceit, the shadow builder, I am. That which builds the shadow, conceiving, looking back and conceiving oneself to be something. So each of these is indeed worthy of consideration. So what I'll say primarily is that these, so what he's saying is these are skillful means you can pick up. But to pick it up, you associate with good, with the wise, with good people, and you associate, you drink it in. And then you, from that, you apply careful attention. So you can bring it down to two factors. Careful attention and kalyanamitta. You can even bring it down to one factor, because the kalyanamitta is essentially the careful attention of another person, right? It's their careful attention that's, I think this is probably, sounds like what you might be helped with is this. That's careful attention. In that case, it's coming from the other person, but still you pick it up. So really careful attention and kalyanamita, almost like mirror images of each other. Understand? Kalyanamita gives you careful attention. Careful attention is the essence of what you, of what the, what's coming in. Yeah, the encouragement to sustain that. So these really are internal and external aspects of the same quality. Therefore, we should always abide with this quality of careful attention, even when we don't have kalyanamita physically around us. Then, yeah, we listen to, we recollect, and we relate to our minds and our bodies with a process of careful attention. It's steady. It's looking at what is helpful now, what is needed now. And the Buddha presents four possibilities, and these, like, you know, there are more actually, but these are four good possibilities. But essentially each of those is themselves not this is you must do this, so no, this is to counteract that. Yeah, so everything is about conditionality. It means if this condition pertains, then practice that. If this condition is dominant, practice that. Yeah. Yeah. So another one you could practice, maranasati, contemplation of death. One is intoxicated with a sense of the future and progress and success. Remember, we could die tonight. What happened to the future then? So there's another one you can pick up. All of these then are, you can see, are like medicines to combat particular ailments. So kalyanamita, careful attention, says what really is right now, what's needed, what's helpful now. That's, that already, that question already is called loving kindness. It's not saying, you need to do this, you need to do that, this is, you should get on and practice this, that and the other. It's not, what do you need? And that question, that attitude, is already a quality of goodwill, isn't it? caring for you, what's helpful. So then, just bearing this in mind, so that we're looking at foundational things, so you could very well think, well, I don't know, Ajahn says she's this, but then Sayadaw teaches that, and Venerable teaches this, and I read this in a book, and they're all saying different things, I'm getting confused, what should I do? And well, what do you need? Sounds like you need something very simple to ground yourself, everybody's trying to offer you some support, which is the right one, but which is appropriate now. It's like you're going to a restaurant, you don't have to eat every dish in the restaurant. Say, so, today I just have some salad. I've got no problems with pizzas, but today salad is what I feel. This works for me. You don't have to eat everything. Tomorrow might be pizzas, but today it's salad. Okay? What do you need? What's helpful? I don't know. Okay. So then I think you perhaps need to just sit quietly and steady and get very basic and not do too much, but settle. So that this question, this possibility of careful attention, this possibility of a caring quality can penetrate the mind. Get to the point. Now, if you looked at these particular conditions and meditation systems the Buddha's presenting, we have lust, okay, distracting thought, ill will, and conceit, I am. Now, do you have one, did you present one called work-related stress? Doesn't seem to be there, does it? Perhaps in the 5th century BC India, they weren't all jumping into their cars and zooming off to work, commuting in a hurry, looking at their smartphones as they were going along. So maybe, when we ask that question, we're not having to deal with lust or other things. We're dealing with just huge, impacted, over-energized, overstimulated, stressed-out minds. Maybe this is a condition that you would say, oh yes, I don't know what I need, but I know what the sickness is. Right. So you may not know the cure, but do you know the ailment? The ailment may be just stress, tired, busy mind, busy. So then, well, question of Kalyanamita says, well, I think what you need to do is not do very much at all, actually. Just keep it really simple, because you're burnt out and you're always aiming to get everything done. So you've got this pattern. So you should in fact counteract that with qualities and encouragement to not have to get things done. Because that's your illness, could be the hurry up, get this done quality of mind. Yeah. So what's needed then? Perhaps to not hurry up and get things done. To get the energy in your body to settle, the energy in your mind to just be more contented, to soften a little, to take things slowly, to not be in a hurry even to get your meditation going. Perhaps this is helpful. So the Kalyanamita, as I find myself say in this attitude, Kayanamita, then this is a theme that I recognize in people, and so you know you can, by all means, if it's not relevant to you, then nobody's going to stop you doing mindfulness of breathing, 32 parts of the body. Go right ahead, you know. But maybe there's another problem here. And the other feature that I would say is quite common for people, partly in the same area as this work-related stress, is just a lack of goodwill towards themselves. It's because the nature of the intense doing and getting things done does not support spending time being compassionate and kind to yourself. In fact, it spends time directing yourself towards higher goals and achievement rather than accepting yourself as you are. So maybe this is something to encourage. So as you bear these things in mind, so this nature of this field, this congregation, this gathering, is to create an atmosphere whereby you are encouraged to not have to get results, not have to, you know, be perfect at things, but to experience a sense of general gentle encouragement, companionship, and listen to Dhamma. And then you see, as you explore, as you settle into this, what's really needed, what's helpful, what's lacking. And you'll pretty soon notice. As you sit quietly, you notice the mind struggling. It needs companionship. It needs support. It needs, say, a firm foundation. So it's okay, then practice mindfulness of body. Body gives a firm foundation. It's critical. And the quality of ill will has various features to it. There's direct aversion to others, also so aversion to oneself. This aversion to yourself could be that you criticize and fault find yourself about yourself, or also that you imagine that other people do, or you only notice the times when people have been critical and you don't notice the times when they haven't. So in this way, this quality of ill will selects particular features to emphasize. So it's not just a particular directed ill will, it's also a mind state that seeks, in a strange way, it looks around for something to find fault with. Curious piece of psychology, isn't it? Pretty soon, something wrong with me, something wrong with her, and something wrong with saying there's something wrong. I shouldn't be so critical. I'm such a complainer. So, you know, this quality comes up because the atmosphere of befriending, loving acceptance has not been generated. We've been lost. It's not matured. And we've lost touch with it. In a driven world, you can't say that loving acceptance is the normal standard. It's normally not loving acceptance, but achieve something, perform something, be good at something. You only get some praise if you do really well. Otherwise, you get ignored or criticized. That can be more the atmosphere in which one lives. Or you feel you've got to live up to what your grandfather, your parents, your uncle, your sister, your husband, your wife expects of you. God. And so on it goes.
How about living up to the Maya rules? Living up to the Vinaya rules.
What about them?
Isn't that also making oneself to be better from unable to self?
To live according to the Vinaya, you have a lot of patience, and nobody lives according. To live according to the Vinaya means acknowledging carefully where one has transgressed and understanding it. So it doesn't mean constantly being critical, it means assessing clearly when one's mind has slipped away, noticing it, that's how I got mistaken, that's where it came in, so wise supervision. Now, if one is, so of course you can take these training rules and beat yourself up for not being pure or perfect, but some people actually won't even take them up because they're so frightened of how neurotic they'll get. Because you can't accept the fact that you could make a mistake. If you want to keep you want to train, you've got to be prepared to make lots and lots and lots and lots of mistake. Because it's only through making mistake and understand it that you can clear the causes and conditions. Yeah. Because the reality of it is a lot of our confusions and delusions we're not even really that aware of. Their sources, their roots. So they happen when one is careless. Things happen. So then you gradually, through noticing that, you recognize and you take steps to be more careful. Yeah. So of all the training rules and some of the, one of the great monks of the previous century, Ajahn Mun, who's reputedly an enlightened arahant, he said, all the training rules, and there, of course, there is something, 227 in the bhikkhu, over 300 bhikkhu in the bhikkhuni rules, and that isn't all, I'll tell you. There's a lot more refined stuff that you can go on about, probably 1,000 at least. A little piece of protocol. And you look at it, oh my goodness me, oh no. And he said, I only keep one rule. It's called watch the mind. That covers it all. That's the way to do it. And learn to, okay, that's where I make a mistake. Yeah, pick it up. And love the purity, love the goodness. It's not about hating the evil, it's about loving the good. And feeling the blessing of the good, Kalyana quality of the Dhamma. So when we use a word like Kalyana as Dhamma, it's got this nuance. It doesn't just mean true, it means good, beautiful, lovely. And something, must have felt sense of something we'd rather admire, appreciate. So one discards the unwholesome because it feels ugly, tawdry, miserable, unworthy, and we pick up the wholesome because it feels, looks, seems beautiful. So therefore that root condition of being introduced to the Dhamma is something beautiful. And rather than thinking, well, I couldn't do that because I'm such a corrupted, deluded being. So just introduce, associate with, And then one little piece you can pick up. Say, okay, this piece of behavior, I can stop doing that. I can't stop my mind wandering, but I can stop cheating and lying. Good, start there. You do that long enough, purity builds up, mindfulness builds up, sila gives a foundation. Then I get a sense of honor and self-respect. Now I can also think, I think all this sensuality is a little bit beneath me actually. So I can give that up. Didn't think I could do that. But this is what's called ripening, maturing. You start with what you can do, get it so it's something that you really enjoy and appreciate, then your taste, your mental attitudes, your mental atmospheres change, and suddenly things that you were compulsively drawn to, you're not interested. Yeah, and like, you know, no, this is the way it goes. If you look at into meditators, people who cultivate right across the field, looking very generally, you know, over a period of time, they all want to live honestly. Yeah. They don't want to cheat and lie. They don't want to get drunk. You know, they don't want to kill. They don't want to steal. They don't like the idea. It doesn't feel, you know, some people do, clearly. And right across the board of meditators, they soon be somewhere where it's quiet, gentle and peaceful, rather than wildly exciting and stimulating. They don't want to go to raves. They don't want to go to orgies. They don't want to go to wild parties. They want something quiet and peaceful. Why is that? Are they all conforming to some rule? No. Because the maturation of the Dhamma, certain things you no longer have a taste for. And certain things you do have a taste for. That's the way it goes. Mm-hmm. This is why association is so important. It doesn't mean, you know, you've got to believe this. Just associate with it, take it in, feel how it feels. Let your mind take it in, drink it in. Give it some time and see after a while. Yeah. It feels not so good anymore. This is the need for that sense of wise receptivity. And so all this cultivation, a lot of it is occurring at a fairly quiet, subtle level. It's not the heavy, forceful doing. It's something, it's a gradual changing of taste, reflecting, considering, putting aside, inclining. And that, over a process of time, is called the maturation process. And maturation isn't something that you do, it's something that occurs through staying in touch with the Kalyana Dhamma and the Kalyana Mitta, yeah, and the Kalyana careful attention. Careful attention, what's helpful for you now? And make that quality of attention something that, as if a really wise and good friend is asking you. So you don't think, well, a tuna fish sandwich. No. What's helpful for you now? Feeling a little bit, you know, unsteady. Then maybe you should just spend some time grounding yourself, awareness of the sensations in your body, holding your body posture upright, contemplating until your mind feels steady. When the mind feels steady, a steadied mind, a steadied body will by itself begin to discern subtle qualities, because the mind has been made steady by bodily presence, by mindfulness of body. The mind will discern by itself, with no particular effort, it will begin to discern, ah, this is more beautiful, this is calming, this is enriching, this is distracting. By itself, just that, an encouragement to know for yourself, you'll find that your mind will start to steer. So if you're finding in your practice you're constantly having to tug your mind back to the breath, which is another experience people have, to get tired, tugging their mind back to the breath. You can see every time they're tired out, you can't really feel it very well, so the mind runs away, tug it back, stick it on. If you're doing that, my advice as a good friend is, no, you're not, that isn't working for you. That isn't working for you. It shouldn't be like that. Yeah. It means that the proper conditions for mindfulness of breathing have not been established yet. Yeah. Proper conditions of mindfulness of breathing, as with everything, association with qualities of goodwill, steadying yourself in your body, give yourself the time to allow that process to have its effects. And so it's the way I cultivate, this is what I do. Give it time. And settling, putting aside what I don't need, because I don't need it, not because I'm tugging, just enough of that. Pretty soon, rhythm of breathing comes clear into awareness. It comes, it arrives, it comes to me. That's what happens. So as a friend, I'll tell you, that's what happens for me. And that's what happens for me. I would suggest it could very well happen for you. But I would also emphasize the fact that you're dealing with a living organic system. You're not a machine. You can't come in and say 8 o'clock, bonk, switch it on, here comes mindfulness of breathing, in out. It's not like that. This is an organic system. It means you have to care for it, settle it down, give it the right companionship, treat it carefully and with respect. Let it settle and feel comfortable. Let it feel cared for. It settles down, the agitation, the desperation begins to recede, and you'll find that these qualities, your meditation sign, will arise by itself. So we're now on really the end of our first day. My goodness. Yeah. So for maturation, this is not very long at all. But of course, many of you have been cultivating for quite a long while now. But still, recognize patience, settling takes time. And so the encouragement to do is to recollect. Remember, by being here, you're already doing a huge amount. You are keeping and guarding precepts. I hope you're making an effort to not just to do it, but to acknowledge you're doing it and to feel some of the results of that. Yeah. You're supporting, holding your bodies up, still and steady. That's doing that. Yeah. You're coming to a meditation hall and sitting still and quietly. You're doing that. That's already plenty of doing. Let those things bear fruit and abide in the qualities that arise as you open into receptivity within that. This will be for your welfare, something you can trust because it comes by itself out of the practice of Dhamma. So, offer this for your reflection.